go, the John Curley Sherry Elicker Show, starring Sherry Elicker. That's it.
Is that it?
Let us get the f***.
Ah, here we are. I'm in the news! Curses a lot. Okay, let's see. We just talked about this. Aaron just did anyway. The man that went into that tavern in Tacoma and executed, words of the survivors and the family, described the actions of the man. I hadn't heard about this case, just read the details of it recently, and awful what this guy did. He's sentenced to life in prison in 1980, King County murderer. Could be up for parole. Dory's been talking about this. It is a really awful story when you read the details of what they did when they went in there. I can't figure out for the life of me why they decided to do the things that they do, tying people up, hanging the women, having them take their clothes off, and then executing the people that were in there. And then what, you think to yourself, so brutal, so heartless, so obviously guilty of all of this, and then why would they be up for parole? This is another story that fits into the wheelhouse of your experience when it comes to the prison system. But what additional details am I missing in there, Sherry?
Well, he's eligible for parole because the laws, sentencing laws, changed back in 1984, and their sentences, the people that were involved in this, became eligible for review. So the eligible for release, there were several reasons, according to the state documents, including he was a low risk to reoffend, he had remained sober and out of trouble in prison, and he participated in support groups and therapy sessions. So they think that he is now going, I don't know about being an active member of society, but remember, when you're out on parole, you're not completely free. I mean, what that means is you are going to be monitored and you have to go to a parole officer and do all of the things as part of your release. So he'll probably have to go to a halfway house or do some other, you know, types of things before he can be, you know, completely free. But the family is pushing back on this, and they think that because of the brutality of the crime, that should be factored into this, that because of what he did and two murders, that he should not have that privilege to be able to be released.
Dory Monson spoke with Kelly Tarp about her family and what they went
through. How did your mother survive the torture and triple murder?
She was hung along with Sherry from the bathroom stalls with the cords wrapped around her neck. And when they passed out, the cords loosened up enough to where she was able to untie herself. Both her and Sherry were naked, tied back to back with the cords wrapped around their necks in the bathroom stall. And she survived barely.
Right.
Yeah. And then she crawled from the bathroom, tried to find some clothes or something, and she found my dad and Robert and Linda.
And they'd been executed, just shot in the head, right?
Correct. Timothy Pauly could have walked out that tavern that night, and he didn't. He chose not to help my mom. Linda or Sherry, when he saw the condition that they were in, and he knows what happened to Linda, he opened up the cooler door and executed my father and Robert point blank. They were tied in the cooler. They posed him no harm, and he executed them.
Hear the pain in her voice. It's been since 1980. Her reaction, this is Kelly Tarp's reaction to the news.
What was your reaction?
Dory, we were devastated. They didn't even tell us. We received an email, and there's a victim liaison that we met via Zoom, and she told us that whenever we questioned in terms of why, how did they come up with this decision, how is this possible, all we were told is the decision is there, that he's met the requirements and checking off a box in a class. But that's not true rehabilitation. That doesn't change the mindset and the person that he is and what he's capable of. We are fearful. When he walked out that night, we would have been orphans had my mom not survived.
The other thing is that a crime with all of these elements in it, why are you up for parole? I mean, I guess you're not sentenced for life. You're sentenced for life, I assume you don't come up for parole. Maybe you do at some point or something. But often someone will serve about two-thirds of their sentence, and then they become eligible for parole. Is it a way of sort of saying that, that we have, this person has redeemed themselves, that they have been, that sort of the restorative nature of jail has somehow fixed them, and now they're able to be free again? It would seem like those crimes, I guess you can't go back, but these crimes and these details of this crime, that these people would not be available for parole, not be up for parole, or likely to get it. And I guess she's saying that what he went to a couple of classes and did this and did that, and the parole board has the power to be able to release this person back out into society.
Well, I don't think he went to just a couple of classes. I think that over time, I mean, this is since 1980 or when he was sentenced in 1981. You know, they have to look at the at his whole, you know, prison career, if you will. And so when they look over it and they see that he's a model prisoner, that he hasn't done anything to create problems there, that he's either taken classes or gone through, you know, whatever it is to become sober, all of the things that they you have a plan when you get to prison. You meet with somebody and there's a plan that you go through. And the fact that he has accomplished all those things and done what he was supposed to do, sentencing laws say he has a right to go up against, you know, up in front of the parole board. The parole board has the discretion to say no, that the brutality of the crime was such that that man should never get out of prison. They didn't do that. So it's unlikely that the governor will overturn a parole board decision. It just probably won't happen. I'd say it's highly unlikely. I could be wrong. But what they're asking for now is they're saying at the very least, can they prevent him from living in Thurston County where they live? Because it's just too traumatizing for them to have him in their area, you know, to see him in the store or, you know, on the street somewhere, that would just be too horrible. I mean, the family, obviously, it's so devastating what they went through. And the thought that this man might encounter them another time, regardless of if he's, you know, safe or not, it doesn't matter. It's just that it's just horrible to think that you would run into someone who did that to your family.
Yeah. Moving on to the fact that the president has been using the term ultra MAGA.
My plan attacks inflation and grows the economy by lowering costs for working families, giving workers well-deserved raises, reducing the deficit by historic levels, and making big corporations and the very wealthiest Americans pay their fair share.
Here it comes.
The other path is the ultra-MAGA plan.
Ultra-MAGA plan.
Put forward by congressional Republicans to raise taxes on working families, lower the income of American workers.
That was their plan. They came up with that. I got an idea. Let's raise taxes on everybody and lower everybody's income. Yeah!
Threaten sacred programs Americans count on, like Social Security.
Let's threaten sacred programs. All right, we're going full MAGA.
Medicare and Medicaid. And give break after break to big corporations and billionaires.
That sounds like a great plan. Jen Psaki was asked on her last day.
Who came up with this phrase ultra MAGA? Why the need to kick it up a notch? Well, MAGA wasn't
kick
enough.
It up a notch.
I mean, why now use
super ultra MAGA?
This phrase.
I will tell you is the president's phrase, and the president made those comments himself just last week, as you know.
Okay. Did the president make up that phrase?
Absolutely not. For 6 months, a woke think tank has worked on this. It was the Center for American Progress Action Fund. And they were trying to come up with some sort of branding for the Republicans that would scare people. And they knew that MAGA represented the out of the mainstream, right? They figured ultra MAGA would be ultra out of the mainstream, ultra fringe, right? And so they came up with this. And no, he didn't do it. They were paid nobody knows how much money handsomely to work on this.
It has backfired because I look online. You can buy ultra MAGA hats and ultra MAGA t-shirts now, because that's part of the new thing that you are not just MAGA, but ultra MAGA. So whatever they had spent on this thing to have these marketing consulting groups come up with this thing, it has not worked because people are fully embracing super ultra MAGA. and really to be, you know, all in, because apparently if you're ultra MAGA, then you're all for raising taxes on middle class Americans, cutting people's salaries, getting rid of Medicaid, Medicare, reducing Social Security, letting the rich not pay their fair shares, and letting corporations get away, because that is a winning agenda for just about anybody. So there you go. That's the that is the latest attempt from the White House to try to tie inflation to Putin and inflation to who else are they blaming it on? Ultra MAGA? Somebody else? Is it somebody else's fault? I looked up to see. Inflation began at September 2019. The United States government spent more than it took in. It's been doing that for a while, but it really did a big number. It really started to jack those numbers up. And the GDP started to drop just a little bit. We kind of fell down at about 1.9, maybe 2% GDP. But then spending started to increase. And right about there, that's when you started things really started to take off. And then inflation kicks in a couple months later, way before Putin and way before Corona had killed anybody, because that's the two things that Biden likes to point to, Putin and the coronavirus. So both those things not a factor in this. This is a true example of you make too much money. You create too much money. You've got big problems that come along with it. But the good news is you have somebody like Vice President Kamala Harris explaining that if we all work together, then we'll all be working together.
Which is why we will work together and continue to work together.
That's two times.
To address these issues, to tackle these challenges, and to work together.
Three.
As we continue to work
together. I swear to God, the word together is in there. But I think she looked at it and saw the word together and realized, I think I've said work together a lot. Because listen to this. She's got to kind of catch herself like she's about to read it.
To work. Operate.
See the pause?
Yeah.
I think
he's
in there again. It would have been three. Yeah, okay.
From the new norms, rules, and agreements that we will convene to work together on to galvanize global action.
There you go. I got it.
Does she not read this beforehand? Wouldn't you take a look at it and go, hey, guys, I've got five work togethers here. Can we rewrite this before I have to, you know, put it out there?
Yeah. Can we work together on this thing? Because it seems like work together is coming up too often. I don't know whether it's she looked at it or maybe somebody in the office wants to submarine her. I don't know. But I mean, how do you look? Who writes that thing and looks down and what, did they have a bet back in the office? I'm going to write work together seven times. Let's see if she says it. You know, like what was the guy's name from Anchorman?
I know what you mean.
Put the question mark at the end of the thing. Come on, Jacob. What's the guy's name?
Ron Burgundy.
I'm Ron Burgundy. Yeah. Who put the question mark on the teleprompter? Right. She always sounds like me when we were supposed to get confirmed. I was supposed to get confirmed in church, but we had moved to a new parish, to a new town, didn't get the regular confirmation. So the priest said, we will come to your house, have dinner, and then ask you the questions after dinner. So my brother and sister, of course, for weeks, hey, let's go upstairs and study confirmation. Let's get ready. Why did God make me? What is the sacrament? What is grace? You know, what is God's plans for me? These like 7 or 15 questions from the Baltimore Catechism, all at one. Why did God make me? Who is God? What is grace? And I didn't study. And I just said, you just throw a couple of holy holies in there. You're okay. My mother said that at a certain point, while the priest was asking me the question, she said she just for a moment thought, I wish I had never given birth to him. It was so uncomfortable. He's like, and okay, Michael, what is a sacrament? A sacrament, Father. And my brother and sister looking at me like, yeah, a sacrament. I was like, yeah, I'm sorry, Father, did you say something? I was just asking what a sacrament was. Yeah, okay, Father, what is a sacrament? Well, Father, you know, a sacrament is, it's God's eternal light through the paraclete working within the Holy Spirit's power to create in our covenant with the archangels through the Spirit of Mary, the Virgin Mother, the grace of God.
Holy.
he goes, go on. He's like, in the, I mean, oh my, and you go, hey, Charlie, why don't you give that one a try? Grace is an outward sign of God's love for me. I was like, whoa, wow, you shortened up what I had.
You couldn't copy what they did? Like, you couldn't make them go first? I have to go, you know, go to the bathroom and then listen through the door and then copy theirs?
And Sherry, we lived in a very large home. There would be no going to the bathroom.
Oh, sorry.
Listening in on some door near. What do you think? They were right the other side of the door? Were we living in a one-room flat? Huh? With a hot pan, a hot plate or something? Your father in the corner eating cold soup out of a can, picking it himself.
I didn't think that. I just wondered if there was a different strategy you could have followed.
I'm going to go into the bathroom and then listen as they answer the questions. Okay. Good plan.
Okay, I just thought.
I'm glad you weren't my
sister.
Okay, no.
I'm sorry.
I'm glad
okay.
you weren't my sister.
All right, okay. I'm sorry. I would have given you the answers. I would have.
Then the priest asked, what was my confirmation name? I said, Zorro. And then he got mad. Oh, my. All right. Nikki, your question is, what is a sacrament?
What is a sacrament? Isn't
Come on,
that
Catholic? Yes.
Yes. The sacrament is, isn't it the blood of Christ?
It's an outward sign.
Oh.
Never mind. Nope. Yeah. You know what? Why don't you go to the bathroom and listen through the door, all right?
Come
While
on,
I answer the question. Ring, ring.
Okay. Keel Mortgage, there you are, everybody. Keel Mortgage, looking forward to hearing from you. Keel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. Thank you, Keel Mortgage. Thank you, Laura Keel. All right, here it comes. As Aaron just mentioned, more rain on the way. Seattle Times has a piece right here. Unusually wet, cold spring may persist in Seattle. And then we got a picture of a bicycle messenger. There's that guy on the bike. He's got his messenger. He's out riding the bike in the rain. And, of course, he has a mask on because he's riding in the rain. He's got a COVID mask on because he's brainwashed and wet washed as well. The rain will continue. Tough, low pressure trough in the place. It looks like we have had Seattle monthly rainfall through the 14th, 2.2 inches, fourth wettest. Holy moly, in 78 years, showers on Monday, it's cold and it's wet. And this brings up the story that we were going to do a while ago, Sherry, that there are a number of people that live in Seattle, live in the Northwest, that just love the rain.
They love the rain, and there is an article in the Seattle Times about what makes you a Seattleite and a Pacific Northwest local. There are a few things that they believe really distinguish you as somebody that's the real deal. The first one is you wear casual, outdoorsy clothing. 78% of people are true locals. That are true locals wear outdoors. They prefer sort of, you know, casual clothes, outdoorsy type clothes, that type of attire. Not, you know, East Coast stuff. They want to wear things that are comfy and casual and that they can, I guess, go from inside to out in.
You know what I've never understood is the guy with the long sleeve shirt, okay?
Right.
A button down, and then a tie, and then a polar fleece vest over top while in the office.
That's a little bit of a uniform, though. I've seen a lot of people wear that.
I know. It's just, what? Huh? Huh? Are you too dressed up with the tie?
Gonna
pull it down about 50 notches with that nasty old polar fleece vest you got on? I ran into somebody over the weekend. They're like, yeah, I don't judge. I'm like, yes, you judge. The fact that you're saying you don't judge means you judge. Because she was like, yeah, I said, you know, I was being all judgy. And she's like, yeah, I don't judge. I said, what motivated that? Well, you seem to be judging. Oh. So it seems like someone's judging my judge.
There you go.
All right. Is it an unnecessary sound effect for you? Anything else on that list? Because I was going to list all the stuff about people that like the rain. I read all about it. At first I'm thinking, come on. People say they like the rain. Oh, no, I'm really into rain. Or, you know, I love hot mustards or whatever. Something that, like, most people don't like or something. And then they decide they're going to go counter. It makes them seem more interesting. Like, as Bob Marley used to say, if you say you love the rain, why are you walking under an umbrella?
Well, this is something that's supposed to be very true. They say that 64% enjoy gray weather, and 72% of people that are locals or that are the real deal are not bothered by the rain at all. 72%. And maybe that's because they're used to it. Maybe it's that's just you become so accustomed to it, you can't really let it bother you or it would drive you crazy. I mean, are you bothered by the rain?
I hate it. That's why I live here. Couldn't take it. Oh, okay. Couldn't take it. Couldn't take the rain. And then I used to do, it would be raining it was gray. I'd get on my motorcycle, come up over the mountain, come over here, be here, just hang out for like 3 or 4 hours. And like, oh, God, I got it. And then go back over. And as soon as you come back over, pass over Snoqualmie Pass, come down in, you all of a sudden just sort of like getting under a blanket. You just slide underneath all these clouds and it's gray, 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 that kind of gray, weird, bluish color. My first wife, Paula, hated it so much. She used to walk around with this visor that she had found somewhere at a garage sale. It had all these batteries hooked up to the side of the thing, and it shot UV lights like directly into her eyes. And it was this big plastic thing that went on the front, and she would wear that thing everywhere. And I used to wake up in the morning and quick turn on the weather, and you'd see like Rich Marriott, well, gray skies and continuing the clouds and showers and light showers, and then blah, 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 and then sun breaks and then showers again. I was like, oh no. And I'd see the 5-day forecast. I'm like, five straight days of the big plastic battery operated light thing on her head.
That couldn't have been healthy either. That just all the UV light in her eyes. Not good.
Right. She couldn't see anything 3 feet in front of her because the lights, she can't see, come banging into the wall all the time. Oh my God, it was awful. And it does wear you down. If you're from another city, if you're from another place, I've heard, used to hear that people would give it about 2 years and the weather would be enough just to just finish them off. They just couldn't take it anymore. A lot of people from California that came up here in the late 90s, they're like, oh, I can't stand it. When you see that you're like 50 days of sunshine and the rest are overcast, it just wears you down mentally. At least me, anyway. Jacob, you're born and raised here, right?
That's correct, yeah.
Right. I mean, not here in Cairo building, but you were right. Now there's a lifer.
Right.
Right. So does it bother you? I mean, because have you lived in other places that have like a decent amount of sunshine?
I visited them. Right. I suppose it's maybe a fish in the rain that doesn't know, what else besides water is. Yeah. No. So I suppose. You grew up around it. You are medicated for the seasonal affective disorder from an early age, and then you never know anything different.
Right, and you too, Andrew.
Yeah, I'm about the same. The rain is kind of sucks sometimes, especially when you're trying to ride a motorcycle. But in general, it's kind of, I've come to accept it, and I kind of. I like looking out the window at the rain sometimes, especially around this time of year when all the green leaves and the gray sky contrasts.
Okay. Andrew, that's enough. This was just basically yes or no.
Yes.
Is there a payoff for all of the rain? Like Andrew was just saying that things are greener or, kind of leafier or things like that. Is there some light at the end of this gray tunnel for everybody?
I think it makes us appreciate summer more than like people that live in California or whatever. It's like they don't even appreciate what they're experiencing, whereas like we soak in every moment of it.
That's
right.
But
they brag about
it. When you get a sunny day, you're like, whoa, and everybody goes out and celebrates. So here's things, according to this doctor, this is involving you and Andrew, you are more confident in yourselves. You are more resilient towards tough times. You know how to keep things in a positive perspective, and you see beauty in sadness.
It's about half right, I think. Two of those things I think I am, and two of those I'm not.
You have a keen sense of your own mortality. Ooh, that's depressing.
Ew.
Ooh, wow.
I know I'm going to die.
Andrew, how are you feeling with your own mortality?
It's fine.
There, that's it. That's that sharp, keen sense of your own mortality right there.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
It's fine.
All right, well, yeah.
It's fine. I'm going to die.
Ride a motorcycle in the rain. All righty. This fits right in with one of the many stories that jobs that Sherry has had. Were you actually the ball reader on the lottery thing?
Yes, I was. It was the midday lottery drawing in Baltimore on the WBAL TV station. And every day after my show, I had a show on WBAL radio, I would go down for the midday lottery drawing and I would do the whole, you know, they would, the ball would pop up and
Can you do one for us? Do one of your favorites if you could.
Okay. All right. Okay. So you'd start out and it'd be something like, you know,
Should we close our eyes for this?
No, I think you can keep them open because I want you to see the balls. Okay. Ready?
Okay. Here we go.
So,
Hi,
I'm Sherry Ellicker from WBAL Radio. And today's winning numbers are 2, 7, and 6 as printed on the ball. Make sure you play blah, 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 your scratch-off tickets, blah, 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 that type of thing.
Did this job have a more technical title than ball reader, as John described it?
Yes.
Perhaps. I'm not really sure. Okay. But when I had a two-year contract, and when they renewed my contract for the third year, I made sure that I didn't have to do that anymore. That was one of my things. I was like, I don't care. I'll do whatever. I'm not doing the lottery drawings anymore for this very reason that we're about to talk about. It seemed so easy, but it made me so nervous to think that I would get one of the balls wrong and make a big mistake, which would cost, you know, a lot of money.
Across America with Mega Jackpots. It's Mega Millions.
Hello, America. I'm John Crow. It is Tuesday, May 10th, and tonight's Mega Millions jackpot is an estimated annuitized $86 million.
Woo!
To win that jackpot, you must match these 5 white balls plus that gold mega ball. Now, let's see if I can make you a millionaire tonight.
Come on!
Our first winning number tonight is 15. That's followed by 19. Up next, we have 70.
Oh,
your next number
God.
Is 61, and your final white ball number for this Tuesday evening is
20.
Now for the gold mega ball, that is 6. Again, tonight's winning numbers are 15. 19, 70, 61, 20, and then gold mega ball is 6. Now, no matches all 6 numbers. Friday's jackpot could be $99 million. Good luck and play on, America.
Play on!
Play on!
What happened?
Well, unfortunately, he didn't see the little line that's there to distinguish between the 6 and the 9. It was actually a 9. And because of that, it cost them a total of $5,538. That's how much it cost the New York lottery paid that much out to people that had that thought it was a 6 before they corrected the error.
So what do you think? So people went to cash their tickets in?
Yes, people in New York who had the number 6 mega ball were paid out. Because they said, hey, that's what he announced. And that's what, and it did, if you watch the video, it did look like a 6. I mean, he got it wrong, but it's an easy mistake to make. And so
he looked like he was looking straight ahead, not like at the balls coming out of the thingamajigger. Do they pop up in front of him on a screen that he's reading from?
Well, mine were on both sides, so they would be in front of me, but then the ball, it was printed on both sides of it. So if a 7 came up, the 7 came up on both sides of the thing. So you didn't have to look down at it.
All right. Well, at this point, what do they do to the guy? Because I was just following his Twitter thing. He doesn't have anything on there. Did they fire him or let him go?
No, it suspended? Said he resumed his duties on Friday night. So
right
if
back
you got.
In there.
Yeah, if you got that they paid out $2 if the holder matches only the gold ball, which is what he got the mistake on, right? And then $4 if it's the gold ball and one other correct number. So it really didn't cost them that much money. I mean, it cost them a little over $5,000, and they said that the payment was recouped automatically via a lottery account for uncashed tickets.
Can I talk to you? I think we need to do intervention, Mickey, myself, Andrew, and Jacob. Why did you not want this in your contract? Why were you such a diva that you didn't want to call the ball?
Because I didn't want to do it anymore. Because first of all, I had to. It was wardrobe and hair and makeup and all of that stuff. And I had a 3-hour radio show, and I didn't want to go down to the TV station and then have to do all that. And I don't know. I just didn't want to do it anymore. And hello, no extra money. No, thanks.
But what about the fact that you were making people millionaires?
I wasn't making them millionaires. I wasn't doing anything. I was simply calling the balls and hoping that I got it right each time. I just didn't want to do it anymore. It was, you know.
Did you have a cool catchphrase like, play on, America?
Play on. No, I didn't know. No, I always had to read something at the end on the teleprompter about the next game that was coming up. And it was always a tongue twister and some weird, you know what I mean, some reference to like an old TV show or something like that. And half the time, I don't know. I just didn't want to do it.
And he had to look pretty,
check out them balls.
Yeah, that would be a good one.
I was going to say,
you see the balls, okay?
I was going to say, you have to look pretty, too. You have to always do your hair and makeup, right?
That's right. That's right. And that's a little bit of heavy lifting.
Yeah.
You could have been going in there kind of looking all shot out, you know?
Shot out.
I don't know.
That's a new one. I'm going to use that.
Yeah, really? Yes. Well, I'll try not to get that look going, that shot out look. But thanks for thinking I'm capable.